Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. If you just tuned in, we're glad you did that. If you've been listening already, we consider that a sign of a high intelligence. And you're going to be glad you did because our good buddy Bert Folsom is back with us, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Burton Folsom is a professor of history at Hillsdale College in beautiful downtown Hillsdale, Michigan. He's the author of a number of books, including The Myth of the Robber Barons and Empire Builders. And he's here today because there was a birthday recently that was celebrated. And he and a guy named Lawrence Reed, who's president of a Foundation for Economic Education, FEE, an organization that I admire a lot, he and Lawrence Reed wrote an article, a column that was in the Washington Times. And it's about this particular birthday. And we're going to get Bert back in here to talk to us about it. Bert, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks, Jim. Good to be back.
It's good to have you back. So we sang happy birthday to an American icon this last week, didn't we?
We did.
Tell us who it is.
Well, it was old General Motors, which started, of course, as a small business that grew into a big business. And then, unfortunately, it's become a lot smaller.
Yeah, everything goes through cycles and excesses and challenges, struggles and success and then excesses. And we're seeing that on many fronts right now. Tell us about the origins of General Motors.
It started with a man named Billy Durant. And Billy Durant from Flint, Michigan. He's one of the few examples, Jim, of someone who was successful in one mode of business, and that was the carriage business, who then was also successful in the successor business, the automobile.
Most of the time, when you're good
in one branch, you don't make the transition to the next.
When the paradigm shifts, as my good friend Joel Barker might say, when the paradigm shifts, typically those who are invested in the old product typically don't make it to the new product.
Absolutely, we rarely see that. We rarely see it. You always have that attitude. This is what got us money, and this is
right.
What's going to keep us alive.
It was good for my dad. It'll be good enough for me.
Absolutely. Very few make that shift. He's a rarity. He had one of the largest carriage companies in the United States, the Durant Dort Company, and he ended up investing in Buick. That's where it started. He invested in Buick. He started Buick and was really in both businesses. And then he really recognized that the automobile was probably the wave of the future. Now, that was not as easy to see as you might think because the roads were not any good back then. And you have to have good roads.
Well, you also have to have gasoline to power these engines, and there weren't service stations everywhere. I mean, and there's a parallel here right now, Bert, because you know, we've got all this alternative energy that people are working on, these alternative engines people are working on. But you know, if you had compressed natural gas right now, where are you going to fill up? If you had a hydrogen engine, how are you going to tank up? If you had electric car. You know, not everywhere can you plug one of those things in. I mean, we have parallel situation right now, don't we?
You do. Those are very good analogies. And also, we didn't have no-knock gasoline back then.
Right.
So the gasoline was not even, you know, Edison for a long time did not think that the internal combustion engine was gonna do it. And so you're in the middle of this transition, and Durant starts Buick. He makes a little bit of a go of it, and then in 1908, 100 years ago, he consolidates with some other companies to form General Motors. And of course, you eventually get Oldsmobile and Cadillac and Chevrolet. Chevrolet came later down the line,
and Pontiac.
Those are the major components, of course, of General Motors. Now, he bought a few others that didn't work, and he eventually got the Frigidaire. He got the refrigerator in there, too. So he was diversifying and doing a lot of different things. He pulled General Motors together 100 years ago, September 1908.
Would that be considered the first real conglomerate of the 20th century?
We had some earlier, Jim. U.S. Steel, for example, which was 7 years earlier, was a conglomerate. With Carnegie Steel, and you had hoop makers and all of that sort of thing.
And, of course, I guess to be a conglomerate, you need to be more diversified. And they were pretty much vertical in the automobile industry, maybe with one or two exceptions.
Right.
So we had the 100th birthday, but unfortunately, the birthday boy was not healthy, was he?
Well, not the recent birthday boy.
Yeah.
But for a long time, GM was on top,
and which led the chairman back in the 50s to ultimately say,
yeah. There was a lot of overconfidence.
Yeah. He said, what's good for GM is good for America.
That was the Secretary of Defense who said that.
Was that who that was? Okay, I thought it was a chairman. But
that's what we thought
50 years ago. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with our good friend Bert Folsom. A lot of cautionary tales yet to come, ladies and gentlemen, for your business and my business. Stay with us. Who never ever learned to read or write so well. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. Check those out. Use them to your advantage. We built them for you so that you would have the maximum opportunity to be successful. And don't forget, there's no barriers to entry. If you can get there, we'll let you come in and hang out with us, use our stuff. One of the things that you've been able to do for a long time is listen to the wisdom of Dr. Bert Folsom. Bert's our guest this half hour, and has been now for, golly, about 10 years or so. Bert's been a member of our Brain Trust. Couldn't do without him. He's the resident historian of our Brain Trust, but his day job is as professor of history at Hillsdale College. And Bert, what we're talking about the 100-year legacy and lessons that we can take away from General Motors, recently celebrated its 100th birthday. And it went through some pretty cool times in the middle part of the 20th century, but probably about, I'm going to say from about 75 on, it's had some rather ignominious times. What would you say?
I think that's probably a good summary statement, and it surpassed Ford. GM was behind Ford for a while. The Model T that Ford did prevailed until the early 20s, and then General Motors pulled it together. Not just Billy Durant, he was a good starter, but Alfred Sloan came along and was a great CEO, and he encouraged entrepreneurship. He got Charles Kettering and people like that to invent a variety of inventions so that, you know, no-knock gasoline and all sorts of other improvements on the car, the ignition start and all of this, and the result was that GM took the lead in the 1920s and did not give it up. They were twice as big as Ford, bigger than Chrysler,
and frankly held that until maybe very recently. I think Toyota may have taken over as the number one, but only recently did that change. Even though they've had their challenges, GM, because of their brands have been pretty impressive from a volume standpoint.
It has. It's been very impressive. I think one thing we can fault a little bit the federal government. Now, GM deserves a lot of the fault for poor entrepreneurship, for succumbing to the labor unions and caving in there. But, you know, they always claimed that they were in danger of antitrust violation. That they were getting too big, and so that prevents you from making those investments into small cars, other kinds of investments in the last 40 years that would have helped them keep their edge. Because the argument is, if we go into those investments and we prevail, the antitrust people will get us. If we go into those investments and we lose, then we lose.
And that's the reality that they had to face. But one of the cautionary tales, Bert, that I want to overlay for small businesses is the larger you get and the more process-oriented you become and the more insulated from Main Street your leadership becomes.
Yes.
That's the definition. What I just described, ladies and gentlemen, is what we used to call being hidebound. And when you're hidebound, that means that you're a dinosaur waiting to become extinct. So small business owners, think about that. How you know, even if you do have an organization, you have managers who run your business, help you run your business, et cetera, how far away from the ultimate customer are you? Do you need to plug back in even once a month just to kind of see what's going on where the rubber meets the road? Be careful about this because, Bert, there, it is quite possible, quite likely that a small business could have the same kind of experience that this huge General Motors has had on a small scale.
Yes, it certainly could. There are a lot of lessons to that. One book that was helpful in seeing this back in the 1970s was John DeLorean's book, On a Clear Day, You Can See General Motors.
Right.
That book was written 30 years ago. If you look at that book and see what's happened today, everything is comprehensible.
Mm-hmm. He would have been a lot more taken a lot more seriously had he been not been such a flamboyant personality. What do you think?
Oh yes, I think you're right. Also, it looked like he was being self-serving in his criticism of General Motors. Also, when he got a chance to do what he wanted to do, he built a car that didn't work well himself.
Right. He would have been better off to become just to become a pundit, not a car man, right?
Right. He was a better pundit than he was a car maker.
One of the things that you mentioned a minute ago was the General Motors' failure to continues to capitulate to the unions. Today, General Motors has got some really serious baggage that's preventing it from becoming effective through its legacy costs to retirees, right?
Yes. I touch on this a little bit in my book, New Deal or Raw Deal, that's coming out, because Alfred Sloan gave in to the unions in the 1930s, and when he did that, he paved the way in the next 60 years for steady erosion in not only GM's profitability, but more critically in what was being conceded to the unions. And those concessions amount to about $2,500 mm-hmm. a car now, just in legacy costs.
$2,500 per car, ladies and gentlemen, just in legacy costs. Before they even put a piece of sheet metal on a wheel, they're in the hole $2,500. And they did all this before when there was not a lot of global competition, before these other countries caught up to us. Well, folks, you may not like it. You may wish things were like they were in the 1950s, but guess what? You know, that's a nice trip down memory lane, but that's not where we are, Toto. We're not in Kansas anymore. We're on the planet Earth, and we're not the only competitors out there. So we've got to get real, ladies and gentlemen, with all of our businesses, not just General Motors, but general small business has got to do the same thing. We have to deal with the reality in front of us, not the fantasy that we wish we had. It's 10 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. We'll be right back with our good friend, Bert Folsom. Stay with us.
And when you smile for the camera, I know I love you better.
We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friend, Dr. Bert Folsom, history professor at Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan. He's the author of The Myth of the Robber Barons and second book, Empire Builders, and third book, which is about to be released. Bert, tell us about that.
New Deal or Raw Deal, published by Simon & Schuster and available for pre-ordering on Amazon.com. It's a history of Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal.
And when's that going to be out officially?
November 4th.
And you're going to launch it on this show, right?
Oh, I'm going to launch it with you, Jim.
All right. I appreciate that. We're looking forward to getting my copy, too, by the way.
You're going to get one.
Bert, By the way, Hillsdale College is the only college in America that doesn't take any government money.
Grove City College does, too. I have to give them credit. But
okay,
Hillsdale is practically the only one. It's almost unheard of. We have to raise every cent that we pay for student scholarships ourselves, where there's no federal money that comes in from in any way, shape, or form, and we are prospering.
Yeah, well done. Good job, Hillsdale. Hillsdale.edu, right?
Hillsdale.edu. Thank you.
So check that out, folks, if you'd like to your child to go to a fine school. And you know, if they got Bert Folsom as a professor, they've got high standards over there, ladies and gentlemen. So check that out. Okay, one of the things you guys pointed out in your book, in your article that was in the Washington Times this last week, you and
right.
Lawrence Reed, was the fact that that the unions are trying to get this card check.
Yes.
Program in as part of the law. And what that means, folks, and you've heard me talk about it before on the show with others, is that instead of having a secret ballot, if your employees wanted to organize and some wanted to be organized and some didn't, they'd have a secret ballot whether to organize or not, and then there'd be a vote, and it would either pass or it wouldn't pass, and you'd have to negotiate them or you wouldn't have to negotiate with them. But with the card check program that the unions are trying to push through, with the help of the current leadership of Congress, is that there would be no secret ballot. However you voted, everybody would know, especially the person who handed you the voting card.
Absolutely. The secret ballot would be abolished. Your privacy in casting a vote would be eliminated, and the role of intimidation would come into play.
Right. This is the kind of thing that the unions fought against back in the 20s and 30s when the owners were trying to do this kind of thing, aren't they?
Yes.
The unions hated this kind of behavior back in the 20s and 30s when the owners were doing it to them.
Well, Walter Reuther took a beating from Ford Motor people over these kinds of issues, and they prevailed, and they won the secret ballot, and they won the right to organize if they could persuade a majority of the workers to agree with them.
And now unions can't sell their product, and they want to resort to basically what I consider to be pressure and intimidation.
That's right.
That's all the check card is. It's now they call it the Free Choice Act, but it's another one of those things,
ironic.
Folks.
It's called the Free Choice Act,
which is a complete canard. It's a total fraud. That whole title is a fraud. And you know what, folks? If unions should be, if a group of people want to unionize, that's fine with me. If they vote on that, this is America. They get to do that. But the vote should be a secret ballot.
It should be, and if they're going to call, if they're going to do this, they ought to call it the Vote Restriction Act or something
right,
like
exactly.
that.
Right, exactly. Well, let's wrap up on with. We got a minute left to Bert. Last thoughts on General Motors. Happy birthday celebration.
Happy
Is it going to be around? I said earlier, are they going to be around another 100 years? And I said, heck, are they going to be around another year?
Yeah, this is part of the issue. The way things are changing, they may not make it to 101. They made it to 100, but we need to see signs of life in ways that they claim they're doing. We'll have to see. They claim, for example, they're producing more vehicles that get better gas mileage, that are more competitive in price, that they run well. We're just going to have to see what they're able to do. They're trying to turn the corner, but they coasted for a long time. They coasted for half a century.
You know what's ironic, though, Bert? I've owned Fords all my life. I bought new Fords. I've never owned a new General Motors product in my life.
Really?
Until this year.
Well,
I own a General Motors car, and I love it.
Okay.
It's really well engineered. So they got some stuff going on. They just need to get rid of some baggage, like the job bank, right?
That's right. Oh,
that's another story.
Not useful.
We've talked about that too before. Hey, Bert, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
Dr. Bert Folsom, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget his books are The Myth of the Robber Barons and Empire Builders, still available. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'll be back in the next hour.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.